5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for tuning in to Live with Andy Dabala and George Webb. I decided to add that one on at the last moment because it seems like we're becoming regulars together, George, and I appreciate your constant appearance on the show because we really know how to break things down. But we're going to be doing like a little old caveman science, but with someone who's actually more intelligent than a caveman. So it should be a little bit better than my previous shows. And we're going to be digging into the spike ferritin nanoparticle vaccine that's been developed. George, you've been doing some work on this past couple days in between going to Trump events and Remdesivir events, and I don't know how you're finding the time, but let's get into the science behind this thing. How you doing, George?
Really good, Andy, and it's like old home week. Now that you got the mixer board back, it's a beautiful story. So first off, for the spike ferritin thing, this goes back to my research partner. She did some reporting and so forth with these special forces operators and said that they have these things called nanoparticles. Mm-hmm. And these nanoparticles could create the impression that there was a pandemic. Okay. And that would help if, let's say, a country was trying to get restless, you know, and you in Venezuela, you could spread these nanoparticles and everybody gets sick and they go home and they go to the hospital and stop revolting. Or the other way around, you could make it so all the soldiers got sick so that when you invaded the city that you know, everybody was in a sick bay. So that was virus-like particles. These things were virus-like particles. And she thought that the library of the old Soviet Union, we took their library and basically went into Fort Belvoir and made our own versions. And anyway, I had these four different folks, two of them I met with task force and two of them I met on my own. They told me that it's not based on what she thought it was anymore. And the Russians had based it on silver. Mm-hmm. So they were nano silver particles, not the nano silver you take that Paul Cottrell sells and so forth. This is to create the impression of a pandemic or a live exercise. But these were done on ferritin, which is iron. You may have ever had imaging done. If you've had heart imaging, it's called a ferraheme. It shows up very well on a X-ray. So that's why they use iron. Iron's also the most plentiful. It's a lot cheaper than silver. It seems to most people think, hey, iron is heavier than silver. And that's because it's denser, and this is the actual nanoferritin. It's called spike nanoferritin.
So these are just the spikes that are on the outside of the nanoparticle, pretty much what they've been talking about, what the actual like coronavirus is. Like, yep. What's the difference between what this is and the coronavirus? Is there much, or is there?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one can't replicate, which is this one. This is the donkey, if you will. And then the real coronavirus is the horse that can replicate. So you're not going to get any more donkeys after this model here.
Okay. So this is the end of the line right here.
This is the end of the line. But you can make these things in the billions so it can still simulate a pandemic for a live exercise. And they're really three spikes together in small bouquets of three. And you've got six kind of bouquets here, mm-hmm. So for a total of 18 spikes. And then that core in the middle is actually like iron. It's actually an iron core.
So it's not gold like I previously. They've
improve the technology where they don't have to use these super expensive gold nanoparticles, and they're now using iron.
Right. When you're first following these things in the body, and Andy, you cited a lot of gold backbone studies or a lot of gold core studies. The reason why you do that is because they show up really nice.
Okay.
In when you're doing CT scans. Hello, WeCat. Good seeing you here. And everybody, there's the Biomancer. So the gist here is that the U.S. Army made it, and we had a few discussions back and forth between us, you know, is it nanosilver or is it nanoferritin? And here's the guy running the show, and here's him holding the model at Fort Belvoir. Well, he's actually over at Walter Reed
mm-hmm.
Hospital, but there he's holding it. That's the spike nanoferritin.
Now, is he related to Sina Bavaria at all? They do have like a similar kind of resemblance going on.
He looks like his brother, but a younger brother. But he's this guy's name, Mojo, Mod Jarad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, like Mark Kulak says, why can't we get a couple of Americans in this, you know, weapons program? Can we have just a couple? But it always seems to be the FBI puts people in from other countries into these key positions in our national.
Well, they get the Americans like out in the fields in like Africa and out there in India, and they're the ones that are like collecting samples, and these guys are the ones in the lab. So they like switch them on. So they, it's like hard to trace and track what's really going on, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder, anyway, this is, I don't know what. This guy has the same Iranian background as the guy who ran Fort Detrick's Sina Bavaria. We wrote a couple books about it. But this is a particle which can create, in all other purposes, a pandemic. If you had a, let's say, a bio lab and you had a patent
mm-hmm.
that you could hack into the Johnson Controls York air conditioning like Shuang Wu does,
mm-hmm.
and you reversed the motors and blew this stuff out, people would be getting sick and having corona-like symptoms, just like if there was a regular coronavirus, if they breathed them into their lungs.
Would it be as severe as the actual coronavirus, or would it, you said it was like a donkey earlier, would it
it's a little more effective, and that's why they use it as a vaccine. It also causes your body to react the same way, and it creates a vaccine. That's why that DTRA is using these four vaccines.
Okay.
They can release them, but they don't have to worry about them replicating, and it causes the soldier to come up with the antibodies.
Now, is there a possible way for us to trace if it's like an actual virus that was out in nature or something that was like created in the lab like this? Or is this just kind of, because I've done some work on the gold nanoparticles, and apparently they're like biodegradable, and once they like enter the human body, they form the lipid nanoparticle around the outside, and that's how they like get infected. And it's like the gold, I guess, degrades and goes away, and you can't tell at all that it's in the cell. I'm assuming they can do the same thing kind of with this iron here, because it just goes in the blood and it looks like you got some iron in your blood, right?
Well, I think this is true if it goes in your digestive tract, because okay. the passageways are so much huger than if they're in the lungs. In the lungs, I think these things actually may get trapped, and the iron is actually lighter. Its atomic number of 26, and silver is 47, and gold is mm-hmm. 92 or something. Maybe that's lead, but it's way up there. This, if breathed in, could leave a residue of a bunch of the organic, you're right, Andy, the organic spikes would get broken up by enzymes like trypsin and other acids and so forth, but it might leave behind the nano cage, the nano structure, the nano scaffolding that's mm-hmm. inorganic. And that could be like lodging in your lungs. It could be a potential cause for long COVID. This could be the potential cause for long COVID. We don't know yet.
That does seem to make sense, because I mean, like COVID-19, when it was originally going around, it was like, you get sick, like it takes a couple weeks, you get severely sick for like 5 days, and then you're fine. And then all of a sudden the vaccines start coming out, and it's like, that's when long COVID really started getting on the scene. And was this like it's developed at Walter Reed, like the hospital, like, was this tested on like Army veterans, or was this developed at Walter Reed in the Walter Reed lab? They got some people in there with coronavirus. Hey, sign up for this new vaccine we have coming out. And like, it seems,
that's exactly how they did it. And we interviewed a couple of people that came to our, various charrettes that had volunteered for vaccines at Walter Reed, which is also Bethesda Naval Hospital. But what Task Force, my old research partner, was looking into is the uninformed testing in nursing homes and VA hospitals of critically ill VA people. Because, you know, they can't speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give it a try, that kind of thing, especially when there's a lot of money to be made.
Well, yeah, and there's also, like, the people were like on lockdown and they weren't able to like visit their family members, and people were sick and like, hey, sign up for this thing. And it's like, I'll do anything to get rid of this wicked cough and throat thing I got going on. So this I do have a little video of Dr. Majerad breaking down this vaccine.
Let's play it. Give Mojo the mojo. Here we go.
You've talked about this being like a military, it's like a military vaccine. This could be a military virus, could be released at the military games. It's like, there's just more and more evidence is coming out that this was all just the United States military.
And Andy, we just had Redfield, the head of the CDC at the time of the outbreak. Remember all the books that said September 2019 was a breakout. It was conspiracy theory. All the books were conspiracy theory. Well, guess what? He just said September breakout. And you know it didn't happen before September 12th. That's when the Wuhan Institute of Virology pulled all their sequences off the web. So you know it happened before then. So we're arguing about the same 10 days now. So that's verification for me. But Mojo does a good job here. You'll see how he's... this is not conspiracy theory. Virus-like particles are not conspiracy theory. It's Mojo talking about it.
All right, here we go. Let me know. This is the first time I've played a video with a Rodecaster in a while. Let me know if you can't hear the audio, George. So Rare developed the spike ferritin nanoparticle vaccine to prevent COVID-19. SPFN entered phase 1 clinical trials in April.
I can't hear it.
You can't hear it? That is actually weird.
You may have to increase his volume.
Is that what it is? Second here, George. All right, what about now?
The part of the virus that educates the immune system to be presented in an ordered way multiple times over. Here we have a model of our vaccine. In the center is ferritin. Ferritin is a protein that is common to all living things. It carries iron, but it has a special property. It assembles itself into a sphere, much like a soccer ball that has many faces. On those faces of the soccer ball, we can attach whatever we want. In the case of our vaccine, we're attaching the spike protein, the part of the virus that attaches to your lung cells and allows the virus to enter into your lungs. So what you can see here is that this...
I just pause it for a second, George Webb, and make a... That's exactly what Ralph Baric did in the lab with Xi Jing Li in Wuhan. So like...
What's in 2009.
What's the difference between what this guy is doing than what... with what Ralph Baric is doing?
Well, I think Xing Li was the difference is the backbone, I think, that Baric created was a mouse backbone, and I think he created a bat backbone, and then he put a humanized spikes.
Okay.
And the whole idea was, let's see if we can't get the bats to get infected by either the rat or the human, the humanized mice. And I don't think that ever worked out, but they tried like crazy.
All right, we'll continue with this video.
Vaccine looks very much like a virus, presenting its spike multiple times around. If we look at
now, him just saying the vaccine looks exactly like a virus, like what you're saying, George Webb, just pop that in the ventilator, you know, give someone the vaccine and let them walk around at the SISM and games and infect people. Is that a possible way that could happen? Like through
or you know, through a drone or through fireworks. Remember these things, you know, I mean, there's a million different ways to disperse these things. So I have no idea how it was necessarily done. But if you wanted to vaccinate your population all at once and also give everybody the impression of a pandemic, you would use virus-like particles to do that, because then you know it's not going to, you know, get out of control, but you're still going to go through all the you know, the exercise that you want to do for your population. So this is why virus-like particles make sense. The Chinese would do that to prepare for an exercise, but it doesn't make sense that they would release a live virus on their own people. That makes no sense at all.
Yeah, because that would just kill off too many of their own, like in their own homeland. That you're right, that wouldn't
and kill their economy. You know, yeah.
Edit on cross section in a microscope, it looks very much like the corona. When we think of coronaviruses as a crown, we then combine our vaccine with something called an adjuvant. Adjuvants are ingredients of protein vaccines that helped boost the immune response. They're represented here in this picture by these big round circles. This one is called ALF-Q, short for Army Liposomal Formulation, with something called QS21. Spiffen, a protein vaccine, was designed to address COVID-19, but it's the first step towards a universal coronavirus vaccine.
Using structural biology, Rare aims to use the Spiffen platform to create a pan-coronavirus.
We have a vaccine candidate that's in the clinic right now based on those structural designs, but that's not where we're stopping. We have this soccer ball shape that we're putting our different vaccine candidates onto this nanoparticle. And by looking at different coronaviruses, we can actually take what's common between those different coronaviruses and bring it back to our nanoparticle design and place different ones onto different parts of that soccer ball. By training the immune response in a certain way, by using those atomic details, that's how we can actually be ready. You know, we can't predict the future, but we know something will likely come in the future. But if we have a well-trained immune system, that will be able to respond to that and essentially stop those infections and, you know, prevent any future pandemics.
So nanoparticle vaccines are on the forefront of humankind. And I mean, I think they've already been implemented with mRNA myself. And I think we're figuring out, George, and they're coming out that we're right.
Yeah. Well, and you can see where if you develop anything, you take something that exists in nature, let's say like the flu vaccine, let's say the influenza, the great influenza. If you model that in with this sort of thing and you could spread it, you could create the same effect of the flu vaccine. Or the flu, the great influenza. And then you also, with the same exact spike, could be doing at smaller concentrations, the vaccine. So you could come up with a vaccine literally at the same time. So you could constantly be doing these sort of pseudo pandemics and constantly be coming up with a new mRNA response or a pseudo particle response. You know, basically you could keep the scare going. You know, if there was resistance over here, you could create a pandemic over here. If there was resistance over there, you could create a pandemic over there. And then also the therapeutics that come along with this. I did a piece earlier today that showed how ivermectin kind of was running neck and neck with the Paxlovid product with it's called Nirma Trelvir.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is, of course, Remdesivir. They're kind of neck and neck in how well they bind to, you know, to the spike. But one's 5 cents and the other's $500, 10,000 times more expensive. So remember, these things, you know, they give them in courses of four. So that's 2,000 to 3,000. And it's usually 40,000 to 50,000 over a hospitalization versus a dollar or $2 in ivermectin. So, yeah. So the ritonavir is the thing that kind of boosts or keeps nirmatrelvir from breaking down. And nirmatrelvir is the thing that's actually a lot like remdesivir, and it's a lot like ivermectin.
Okay. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head, because like the biological warfare has been a great way throughout history to take over a country without, you know, decimating your own army through like bullets and stuff. So it's tried and true, and I think you're headed in the right direction, that this was definitely a military operation that happened at hand. Now, is this considered synthetic biology, or is this actually regular
No, these articles, they don't exist in nature. So the icosahedron, or the soccer ball they're talking about, is used over and over and over again. You can use the icosahedron or the soccer ball for the nanoferritin cage. You can use that for a flu, or you could use it for coronavirus. You could use it for all these other things. And so that's the part that it's sort of like having a modular set of furniture rather than each individual piece.
Mm-hmm.
It can be kind of tinker toy kind of put together. Let's see. Hands-free broadcast communication platform developed to share a patent. Go ahead, Andy. I'll let you read this.
So Deborah Johnson just said U.S. MRDCs, that's the Maryland lab, right? U.S. material development activity promote medical hands-free unified broadcast communication platform to develop to share patient info between medics and hospitals during medical evacuations. Yeah, so if I guess something's going on, I think this is involving like the cell phones and everything, where they can communicate with each other back and forth, and they can monitor the things that are going on. Sorry, I'm just putting the chats on the screen here. And no, Aaron,
that's good. We should read them as they come up, you know.
And Aaron said it's the reason that it's like we see all these overseas people coming into our United States biolabs. It's because it's really a NATO dark hand. It's not all United States Department of Defense.
And Andy, I would agree with that. I was on Stu Peters earlier today, and I said the same thing. I said it's WHO and this committee called the SAGE Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Farrar from the Wellcome Trust was on. And then it's the Secretariat Committee inside of NATO that seems to be the dark hand inside WHO. WHO is a bunch of, you know, people all arguing about periods or commas.
Mm-hmm.
When they were typing up their thing, that doesn't matter anyway. And then the real smart money inside there is the SAGE group that has all these power players. Virginia Bonassi was one of them, but then Jeremy Farrar. And then the Secretariat is sort of the same group over at NATO and or the Atlantic Council. And that's what Aaron's saying. I totally agree with that. I don't see a lot of this coming from the United States. I see it come from Klaus Schwab and WEF and WEF sponsored politicians and generals.
Okay, so that does make sense. So when I always blame, I'm always like, it's not Wuhan, China, you know, it's the United States Department. I should just be pointing at NATO more than anything, because, you know, those they definitely had their involvement. We've seen all the like the Ukrainian bio labs and all these like discrete bio labs popping up all around the world, and you know, like there's you're gonna need scientists to run those things, and a lot of them are blue hat or blue lab coat scientists. Is that what we're calling NATO scientists now? Blue coats?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, these WEF people, I guess blue is their color. So yeah, let's call them blue coats.
So Deborah Johnson says Brigadier General Anthony McQueen, commanding general of USA MRDC in Fort Detrick, Maryland, and Dr. Kavan Majerad, director of Emerging. I think she has a going Dave Under down on us. The strategic advisory group of experts on immunization is charged with advising WHO on overall global policies and strategies ranging from vaccines. So they're saying that she's saying that this Kavan Majerad is in the SAGE group, is the one advising WHO. Does that sound correct?
Yes, yes. The strategic advisory group of experts. They don't mind calling themselves experts. Yeah, the SAGE group. Yep, that's it. And so, that is the military arm inside of WHO. No question about it.
Okay, so I do have a little. So you brought up like the Russians and Project Vector earlier, and how this whole thing was kind of taken there. Their technology in the first place. And I have a little article. I think this is the right one.
Great. I love your...
If it'll let me zoom in here.
I know if you say Virginia Bonassi, even though it's in a public document,
mm-hmm.
you're still going to get a YouTube strike, even though it's in a public document where she's getting all the bids. Somehow that's a strike. I don't get it. But anyway, there you go.
they probably do. They just put those words in an algorithm at this point, and that's how it.
I think so. It's like if Sina Bavari was getting all the bids, I would say Sina Bavari is the guy getting all the bids. But it says it right in the document. So what can you do?
Send them right to Virginia Bonassi, and she'll. It's the Pan American Health Organization, the World Health Organization. If you have a bid, send it to Virginia Bonassi.
And that's why we got the strike. You know. Okay.
I know. We, George, go ahead.
Could you just expand that up?
I'm sorry. Like, it won't expand for some reason.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just have bad eyes. I need to get my eyes checked.
Oh, wait. I think I actually just got it. Maybe I wasn't clicking on the screen correctly. So here we go. It's called Nano Vaccines, and this was written in 2004. It was actually like registered in a database, and it's from the leading institutions here are like biotechnology, Vector, Russia, and Novabrisk, and they were collaborating with the University of Michigan, and they were actually these are like inactivated vaccines based on nano emulsions. So you know how you're talking about like the adjuvants they were putting in the vaccines. I think this was like the start of that. Start of that process and the start of this technology. And this specifically, if you read this here, they were prepping it for the original SARS and back in 2004. And this is the Russians tinkering, the Russian scientists, Project Vector, tinkering with SARS. And there's actually been questions about the original SARS being a vaccination type outbreak, because they actually hadn't found like SARS out in the wild. And there's been a lot of scientists in China that have worked on this and around the world. So the fact that you're saying today that this spike ferritin nano vaccine could have caused the outbreak, that's what they actually say the original SARS might have been as well. And you know, this is why Putin gets mad, because he knows all his scientists are being used to create this stuff around the world.
And I think this could have been, you know, what Task Force was talking about way before, because this could have been a nano silver. You know, the Russians, I think, might have chosen silver as the backbone initially, just because it shows up nicely as well. It's bright optically.
Mm-hmm.
Or it also conducts electricity well, and maybe they were going to try to do some kind of nanotransmitter or whatever. But then these scientists appear to get the BioShield Act is passed in 2004. With that money, they brought a lot of these people, Michael Callahan, for instance, was in Novosibirsk, and they brought Ken Alabeck and so forth, and they brought these people to our universities, and they were supposed to teach us this stuff. Now, what's interesting is the U.S. government, or for whatever reason, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency cut over to nanoferritin, maybe because, ferritin is much more magnetic. And if they wanted to do self-assembly, magnetic makes more sense, because then it'll just naturally happen, like a stack of coins that are magnetized will kind of get into alignment. So, and if you get into alignment, you have more of a chance of a of being able to build an antenna, if you will. Ralph, I'm not, Lieber was working on these, trying to get these things to self-assemble so they could form some kind of antenna. If you run radiation through it, it would start propagating out waves, resonance waves based on the individual thing. I don't know. We don't know. We're just guessing. But there's some reason that the Russians use nanosilver, and then the Americans cut over to nano ferritin.
It's probably just all price stuff, George.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is actually Michael Callahan was actually one of the scientists involved in bringing these Russian scientists over and including them into our United States bio labs. And it was called the Bio Industry Initiative. And the Bio Industry Initiative's mission is to counter the threat of bioterrorism through targeted transformation of former Soviet biological weapons research and production capacities. The U.S. Department of State Bio Industry Initiative is a non-proliferation program authorized in the Defense and Emergency Supplemental Appropriations Act. B2 focuses on two objectives: the reconfiguration of former Soviet biological weapons production facilities, their technology and expertise for peaceful uses, and the engagement of Soviet biological and chemical weapons scientists in collaborative R&D research and development projects to accelerate drug and vaccine development for highly infectious diseases. And as soon as we brought these scientists over, Michael Callahan at DARPA started his super soldier project. And it's kind of been, and they developed the synthetic biology at DARPA. They like put that wing in place too. And now like we're seeing the repercussions of this now in 2023, almost 20 years later, George.
Yeah. And, you know, going to Francis Arnold and along with the Bob Malone stuff down in Florida, Alachua, one of the early ideas for enzymes was trying to take how the body built blood and then redo that in a artificial set of enzymes. And if you think about blood, it's like four catcher's mitts. It's two alphas that are kind of crossways like this and two betas that are this way. So you basically get a machine to add one, then two, then three, then four, just like an assembly line. And you can actually design, it happens in humans with proteins, which are living organic things, but you could actually design these with nanoparticles as well, or nanomachines, they call them. And this has been the real work of these experimentations with nanomedicine. Can we build, for instance, a blood carrier like hemoglobin, but have eight baskets for carrying oxygen, or 10, or 100, or 20, 50? What's the maximum number we could build for a super soldier type program? And then this flips it the other way as well. If we understand how you build this and you need a nice round basket to carry the basketball, can we squeeze it so it's football shaped so that it won't hold the basketball for the enemy? So that's the flip side of this. And this is the thing that Sarah Strzok, malformations of the heme group, this is the thing that Sarah Strzok has her PhD in, is malformations. There's only 100 Strzoks in America. I'm not saying that she's related to Peter Strzok, but it is an interesting that she has a PhD in malformations of the heme. For both.
I guess, just to kind of be a devil's advocate for a second, will this technology actually benefit humans, like our race in the future at some point, if we get through this initial stage of like deaths and experimentation, like ultimately will this be better for us, or like is it just gonna continue, just like you're saying, being, hey, we need to take over this country, let's have a little virus that we release, and like is it just gonna be just used as a weapon from now on?
Well, I think it could be both. I mean, I think it could be a good thing. Let's say, you know, a big part of cancer, for instance, where there's tumors, there's something on that tumor that's different about the rest of your body. And it, those actually have individual receptors that are different from all the rest of your body. So if you could make a targeted sort of lock and key mechanism to get to just the tumor, mm-hmm. and deliver the drug just to the tumor, that type of immunotherapy would really be cool. And I think that they're using this type of nanoparticle for that. So all these are double-edged swords, you know. Yes, you could have better vaccines, you could have better gene therapy, or the side effects that come along with that. So that's why you test, right?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's why you have your clinical trials.
Right. That's why you test and not just, you know, do emergency authorization. Yeah.
I mean, that's why they, I guess that's why they put those factors in place so they could avoid those actual clinical trials that are supposed to take years and years. And you know, that's why a lot of people call it the plandemic, because they're saying that this was all just a giant clinical trial that happened on our world's population. Did you see Rand Paul grilling Moderna CEO earlier today? I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, it, but yeah.
He was digging into him pretty well about the variants and the booster shots. What are, like, the spike ferritin protein is supposed, is this a universal like coronavirus vaccine, or are we going to need boosters if this is actually like a useful vaccine? You know, well, that seems to be the problem, according to Rand Paul's scientific words, because after the second booster shot is when you get the myocarditis cases.
Yeah, it's a real problem. And this is why, you know, in the Jordan Walker, you know, response, they said if the cell or the virus had a gain of function, we have to test it for the likely mutations. Otherwise, our vaccine will only last for a little while, like a month. So we have to test for the, you know, kind of the slight variations that might happen. That's the directed evolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but that sounds a lot like gain of function. Gain of function, I think of more as trying to design a virus to be more deadly in some way, more transmissible or more pathogenic. But I think of directed evolution as trying to keep up with nature.
Okay.
That's how I think of it in my head. It could be wrong, but you see where this is going here.
Just trying to cut the actual virus out, right? And they're just trying to create the vaccine. That's what directed
evolution. Let's say that you have, you know, the virus is kind of changing like this over time, slightly. Each individual prong, let's say, just changes slightly in each direction. You would want a flexible solution that would move with it, you know, that would lock on and not just be rigid and just now you need another vaccine. You're going to be late. Right? A universal vaccine, which would kind of account for all the slight variations, would be obviously the best, rather than five separate ones that don't really solve the original problem, but then leave all kinds of side effects. Mm-hmm. Here's yourself assembling nanoparticles in the vaccine. So you can read this if you want.
Well, it was more kind of a graphic I was going to put on the screen, just your different type of self-assembling. I guess I'll read it. Self-assembling protein nanoparticles in the design of vaccines. So apparently they're making it so, like you're saying, they can target the like cancerous cell and like go after that one. And that's how, I guess, I don't know why they need them to self-assemble that, but
well,
break them.
Think of it this way: is if each of the individual nanoparticles is one of the each of the fingertips, and they assemble first, and then the base of the hand kind of joins them together after they're sure you have a match. That's where you're sort of taking like a soap impression of a key.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you're getting an exact match rather than coming up with 100 different keys and jiggling each one to try to get the right approximate. This is like going right to the, going right to the virus and then molding something that's exactly going to be the right fit.
Okay.
I think that's what they're talking about here.
Could this potentially maybe cause like a blood clot if too many of them like assembled together and it just kept forming and forming like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's much greater chance of that happening than these things all magically coming together and perfectly forming fingertip to fingertip. They could just be flushed and now they're going to accumulate in the kidneys or the liver or the lymph nodes or, you know, who knows where, but it's much better chance that it's sort of like cars that are driving driverless cars without any 6G or 5G. There's much better chance of a pileup than you have a perfect Indy 500, you know, race. These things don't have drivers, so they're just, you know, out there flowing around in the bloodstream.
Like this technology, the nanoparticle technology, it does seem a little, I can see why like the scientists get excited about it, like because they see the opportunity, it takes less time. You can come up with these vaccines at a warp speed for anything that breaks out all across the world. So I can kind of see the excitement because you're like, yeah, we can just throw it in the computer. It comes up with it spits out the product you need and you can go from there. You don't have to do all the testing, but it just didn't seem like it was like it was ready at all. And I think that's why you're seeing all, like you were at the Remdesivir event, like, yeah, there's plenty of mRNA deaths as well as with Remdesivir and Famotidine and this other one you talked about. So if this was actually released on us by like the military and just for profit, then like these Moderna CEOs and Albert Bourla, Pfizer CEOs, they need to start paying. And one of the questions I had, a question for you about that whole kind of Ron Paul, what's Moderna CEO's name? His name is escaping me. Stephen Bancel. Like, what is Bancel's liability in these situations? Because it seems to me like Fauci is the one that should be in trouble, in this Amy Burks and our health representatives, because they were the ones that ultimately like, hey, all our doctors, all our hospitals need to follow these CDC plans. It's not like Bancel's just selling his product, it seems to me. So he's just kind of going along like, hey, take my product. And unfortunately for us, it was bought up pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, go all the way back, the way that these we got to mRNA at all was through Bob Malone and Domain. If Domain doesn't say you can't repurpose any drugs, then we never know about Fauci and we never know about mRNA. But once Bob Malone says there are no drugs that could be repurposed, that opens the gates, the floodgates for the Stephen Bancel. So you wonder if that was rigged. But then if Stephen Bancel is using one of his board of directors, like Francois, our friend here, Francois Nader, and he's using Silicon Valley Bank money in Wuhan to and in Germany to encourage people to invest in drug trials that failed the FDA tests and jump on the bandwagon for the same test to be rerun in China, like, let's say, remdesivir. Here's Francois. And this happened. This is not speculation. Francois looks like he is the money man at Silicon Valley Bank to pay for the remdesivir trial in Wuhan. And now you're saying, wait a minute, you knowingly took a drug that failed for Hep C and failed for Ebola, and now you ran it again,
mm-hmm.
so that you could get it. You know,
they were trying to find the virus for this to work. It seems, yeah.
I mean, this is paying to have it resurrected. The same thing is true for hydroxychloroquine, which worked out great, and we should have used it. Bob Malone knew that hydroxychloroquine was working fine. A study came out on February the 4th, way before he was ever done mm-hmm. with his evaluation with Allkem, the company he was with, and the domain program. So if that's what's happening, if these guys in Moderna are using their board members to invest money and encourage other people to do risky things, like, for instance, make leaky labs, have really bad air conditioning systems,
mm-hmm.
or paying people to rewrite the interface to these air conditioning systems, and practice, you know, spewing out all these nanoparticles so that they then can come to the United States and spew nanoparticles. I mean, if he turns out to be the bankroll behind Shuang Wu mm-hmm. and this cell that came from Germany, this Duisburg cell, then that's not good. I mean, it looks like what it's looking right now is that he paid, or somebody at Silicon Valley Bank through Moderna. Remember, Moderna designed, Stephen Bancel designed the original Wuhan lab. They brought in Shuang Wu, and she got the patent for Johnson Controls and York Air. Mm-hmm. They not only did Wuhan Institute of Virology, but they also did Tongyi Hospital. And then they also did two other hospitals that were built in like 10 days. So they get all this experience of spreading nanoparticles potentially. Remember, they get billions if this happens, if this live exercise happens. And then these people come to America. And she even files for the patent in 2018, Andy. Again, for somebody who's a biostatistician who used to work at Raytheon, she has a 2013 patent in mm-hmm. AI. We don't know if there's a smoking gun there. Who's funding these people to cause these mass panic events, these mass pandemics that Stephen Bancel has become a multi-billionaire from? So those are the questions I want to see Rand Paul keep asking. Let's have Stephen Bancel stay and testify for like a week, you know, and ask him all these questions on, hey, wait a minute, how are you guys encouraging people to go into Silicon Valley Bank and redo trials that failed in the United States? How does that happen?
They had to have inside info, George Webb. Are you planning on going to that event with Robert Malone and asking him some similar questions here pretty soon?
I'm not going to pay $700 to do that. he wants $700, and they're suing for $3 trillion. Andy, I'm sorry, but if I had caused one death, if because I didn't evaluate remdesivir and I shut down remdesivir and I shut down all the other therapeutics, and then somebody then went on to die from remdesivir because I knew that it would have been jammed through, sort of, I wouldn't show my face ever, even if it was an accident. I wouldn't go to any, I mean, the only thing I might do is go to the family who died and apologize and see if I can help them in some way. But the last thing I can think of that you would ever want to do is, if you were the key guy that got remdesivir put in and all of mRNA put in, mm-hmm. and then go and actually do fundraising for the victims. Whoa. I mean, that's what's happening this weekend.
And make no admissions for it about it whatsoever. Just completely flat, like point blame at everyone else but himself. And that's we should all have a little bit of an issue with that. And I have never seen anyone, like, he goes on interviews everywhere. I haven't seen anyone ask him about these connections at all. And he's like, he's an admitted CIA agent. That's all I really need to know about the guy.
His father was CIA, just to protect you, Andy. And his father-in-law was CIA. He says he's not actually directly CIA. He's DTRA, which is a CIA vaccine company, basically. So we'll give him that. We'll say he's DTRA and not CIA. But,
well, I'll blame Michael Callahan, because I'm pretty sure Michael Callahan's the one that called him a CIA agent.
There's no doubt there. There's no doubt there. Michael Callahan says he's a CIA agent. So
no, Michael Callahan, I think, said Robert Malone was one. I've seen in
Did he? Oh, I didn't know that.
So that's where I picked that up from. So
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good source, because Michael Callahan is. So he would know, right?
Yes, sir. Well, George Webb, I don't want to – I'd like to leave the show just at the Spike Ferriton and the breakdown at that. I don't know if you have anything else to add. I don't know if this could this be implemented through vaping at all. I guess that's my only last question.
Yes, and vaping is a way to get your results super quick. You can do 1,000 times the vape load with vaping than you would normally breathing something at, like, a sports stadium or a Benny Benassi, you know, concert or something like that. So it's a way of tracking. Originally, terrorists was supposed to be the original need for this, and then the particles would stay in the lungs, and they could be imaged by these new scanners, these new high-end x-ray scanners, these Leidos scanners. Well, it turned out, I said Bob Malone worked for Leidos, and he denied, finally came out and said, no, I work for the Leidos Lincoln Lab. DTRA is the one paying the bills. And I am working with the vapor bar. I am working with inhalable vaccines. So people don't press him on this. But before, all I would say to the people who's had loved ones that have died or almost died is, before you just give Bob Malone $700 to go see him and then another $10,000 as a retainer for a lawsuit, mm-hmm. why don't you just ask him some questions? Just ask him some questions about, hey, what's this thing about the vapor bar? Do you really do inhalable vaccines? What's this other thing over here about domain? Did you have a chance really to evaluate remdesivir and hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin? Mm-hmm. Is that true? Is that wacky George Webb guy, telling me a story, or is that not true? Just ask Bob Malone the questions before you give him any more money.
And do you think this Bob Malone might have been sending some SARS variant samples to this Muhammad guy, maybe? And like the whole domain, when I first heard that name, I thought of the regional binding domain, because that's what you attach the spike protein to. And it's like, he's coming up with different variants, and they spell it a different way, but that's what they were doing it for the spike ferritin vaccine, correct?
Well, Bob Malone says he was at Allkem. Bob Malone says he was the chief medical officer. Bob Malone says he was in charge of evaluating the repurposed drugs. He says he chose famotidine. He says he got sick at this Biogen conference at the end of February. He says that was a computational chemistry place where they were showing this off. They say they don't have the real virus, so they had to do computational chemistry. That was their only choice. And that's how we ended up with Pepcid AC and not these other things. That's what Bob Malone's going to tell you. And he's going to tell you that the people that he chose to do the trial in New York, this Norwell hospital system, didn't do a very good job. And that's why he resigned. Mm-hmm. But all that aside, this is the most important thing. You are the guy that's been entrusted by the whole world to repurpose existing drugs. There you go. This is the Pepcid AC trial. And if you start one trial and it doesn't work, start another one. Start 50 of them, right? Get enough people trying as many things as possible, because you're the guy everybody's looking to. Nobody's going to say, you know, Bob, you evaluated too many alternatives. Mm-hmm. You wasted $100 million. $100 million is nothing compared to the $3 trillion in damages, right, that were caused. And you can't bring people's lives back. So, again, just ask Bob Malone questions before you give him any more money.
Apparently, Karma Doc saying Bob Malone is threatening to sue everyone. So she's like, are you guys getting sued yet? And it's like, sued for what? Telling the just saying he works for companies he owns? You know, yeah. It's like.
Well, I welcome it because, I mean, first of all, Bob Malone knows I have no money. So, you know, get blood out of a turnip, you know, be my guest. But he also, like you say, Andy, all we do is quote facts, and half the time we're quoting his own quotes. So how could he argue with us? But he is suing people like Dr. Peter Bragan, who said he was the one who misused this mass formation psychosis. He used it to mean, it was supposed to mean how everyone accepted the lockdowns. But what he really uses it as is a way of diversion. Jordan mm-hmm. Walker wrote two key papers about, with the Boston Consulting Group about mRNA and also remdesivir to get remdesivir resurrected. He creates a mass formation psychosis and says, no, he doesn't mention that stuff that really matters. He talks about Jordan Walker being a high-level executive at Pfizer. As soon as you bring up Boston Consulting Group and these two key papers, he didn't want anything to do with it. As soon as you bring up his boss, Chuang Wu, and her two key papers with Lightspeed, with her boss, the number two guy at Pfizer, we don't want to know about that. Pfizer is important as long as you're talking about the low-level guy. You can't talk about any of the scientific papers they wrote. That's usually the sign of a cover-up or a limited hangout.
Yeah, Pfizer, like in their like vaccine documents, how they created. There's probably papers that Robert Malone has wrote, you know, to create the mRNA vaccine. There's, you know, how they always have to cite the papers that they used for their work. It's like there's for sure Robert Malone papers that were cited in Moderna's and Pfizer's work.
Yeah. Oh, and for sure. And going all the way back to 1989 and. Virus-like particles, again, Bob Malone has a lot of those patents. So we need to look into this. The person who is not being questioned today, and I'll leave it at this, is Bob Malone. He would be the best person because that's where all this starts. There would be no Stephen Bancel if it wasn't for Bob Malone opening the door for mRNA. And there would be no Fauci if there was no Bob Malone opening the door for remdesivir.
All right, George Webb, we'll leave it there. Thank you for joining. And George mentioned Robert Malone can sue him anytime he wants because it's trying to get blood out of a turnip. So make
sure. And I'll counter sue. I might be riding some horses. I might be riding a night of on a horse.
Oh, that'd be great, George. He sends me like a message. Sorry, the polo match lasted too long this afternoon. I can't make the show.
That'll be the day, Eddie. That'll be the day.
Go and support George. You can buy him a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/GeorgeWeb1. You can also hit his PayPal link up. They're all on his Twitter page. And make sure you send our big guy some help because we need someone like George on our side, or else we're never gonna get to the truth and to the bottom of what's really going on. So George, thank you again once again for your time. Let me know if you want to do. I'll put the offer on the table if you want to do a broadcast, a morning Twitter space, or anything like that. I know you're running around everywhere.
I would love to do a Twitter space with you simultaneous to this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'll put your Twitter space. I can just share it on the screen and put some documents up as we go. So just let me know what your thoughts are, and just text me in the morning, and we'll.
Okay. From there. And you broadcast Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Andy, at 7 o'clock?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And George officially has the Wednesday time slot. And I try to come up with some fun science-y stuff to do in between. So,
okay.
And George, if you got some news, you're more than welcome to jump on anytime you want.
Anytime. I can do Mondays or Fridays. Anytime I got some hot news.
Anytime you got some news, George Webb, okay. you want to get off your chest.
I'll take you up on that, Andy. Thank you.
All right. Once again, go to George's Twitter at RealGeorgeWebb1. Throw him some love. All the links are right on the top of his page. Just give it a click. And he does these fun Twitter spaces in the morning where the audience gets to participate as well. And we know a lot of you guys out there are scientists, you're engineers. You have a lot of insights to what we're talking about. And the more information we can get, the better. So we appreciate your guys' time as well. George, you have a wonderful evening. And don't drink too much coffee. I don't know if that's coffee in the sky.
No, it isn't. But this is my symbol for buy me a coffee, please, because I do drink a lot of coffee. So that's my... You know, that's how I'm caffeine powered, Andy.
Black coffee only.
I do a little cream. I got to be honest with you.
Okay, you switched it up then. I thought you were always just.
Well, you know what? It's probably the best thing for my health, but not the best thing for taste. It kind of tastes like you're, you know, like when you used to take when you're a little kid, had a sip from, I don't know, like a faucet. And you, that metal taste, it's always kind of got that bitter metal taste. Those lattes are so much nicer.
I'm working, like I've recently, the past 3-4 weeks, have cut sugar out of my coffee, and it's been quite the struggle, but I'm proud of myself. I have not done it for like 3 or 4 weeks, and it's just like every coffee I drink isn't as good, but I feel a little bit better.
I'm with you, Eddie. I can't quite give up the latte yet, but I'm trying.
We'll get there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Real George Webb 1 at Live with Andy, signing out.